But we've already received a couple of questions, Kev, so let's get straight into it. This first question asks, how do we know we can trust the Bible as the historical record for Jesus' resurrection on which all hope is founded?
Yeah, that's right. You're right to say all hope is founded. So it becomes such an important question. Thank you for asking it. There's nothing like the New Testament and particularly the Gospels in terms of historical record in antiquity. By which I mean, when you look at other events, other characters from that time, you know, Roman emperors, Alexander the Great, whoever, people you talk about from way back when, there's often very flimsy, as in very few primary sources, and often from hundreds of years after the events happened. And yet things are taken to be a matter of historical record. There's nothing like the New Testament in terms of the number of manuscript documents and the earliness of them. And Paul himself makes a point of that in one of his other letters, in 1 Corinthians. He says, look, we're writing about this stuff. We're still in the middle of the first century. Go and ask people who are named in the Gospels. You know, go some of them, that where they live, what their name is. You can go and ask them. He says a few of them have died. Most of them are still alive. And you can check all this out by way of eyewitness testimony. So Luke, for example, is very clear that it's eyewitness historical record testimony. And historians of the time say this is just the best. You can't get anything better than this in terms of historical record. They then don't all become Christians. So some of the theories that historians have come up with, PhDs have been written saying, in all seriousness, Jesus must have had an identical twin, you know, or an evil twin or something, because people can't work out. These guys, they definitely believe this stuff. The early church was definitely founded and exploded on the basis of resurrection factual claims. That was all they went on about. And so that basically means that when we think about why the church exploded, if the resurrection could have been easily disproved in the first century by the production of a body or by getting people to finally admit it was a hoax, that would have been extremely easy to do. And yet, this movement turned the world upside down and continues to.
Thank you, Kev. We've got quite a few questions that are essentially the same, and they're all around this question of how should we comfort people grieving a non-Christian loved one when there is no hope?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, that's the worst, isn't it? I mean, if you're talking about if you're talking about comforting someone who isn't yet themselves a Christian and they've lost someone, we can still thank God for a life lived. There'll be good in every life to give thanks for. We know who to thank for the good in a life, whether that life was one that had turned towards God or not. And we can, as Christians, we want to pray. You know, we can acknowledge grief. Jesus wept with those who weep. So I hope that's the beginning of our response. And then to be able to, you know, in a sensitive way, talk about, well, the difference and why it's great to be a Christian. It's great to have hope beyond. If you're talking about comforting someone who is already a Christian and their non-Christian loved one has died, yeah, that's the pits, isn't it? I'm sorry, that must be one of the worst things. And I'm sorry, that is something that many people in this room are living with. So I think the main thing I want to say is let's help each other in that. Let's help each other through that. I think don't feel guilty for struggling with that. If that you are finding that is creating, you know, something that you struggle with about God, I'd say don't feel guilty about that, but lean into the Lord in that and wrestle through the pain of this one with the Lord. That will partly mean, I think, asking for enough grace to be able to live with the unknown, because essentially it's an unknown. You don't know what your dead relative believed when they died. If there was ever a moment in someone's life when they would, at the last minute, cry to their maker for mercy, you think the moment of death would be that moment. So we're asking God for grace to live with an unknown there that's going to be really hard to live with. And I think then to have lots of fixing of eyes on Jesus. Can I still trust that he's good? And things like that. And yeah, what would you... I think it's such a hard one, Annie. Would you add?
No, it's just so hard, isn't it? Yeah.
I think, remember as well, it may have come out of a positive thing in that your family wasn't a Christian family and you've become a Christian. This is what it would have been like in Thessalonica. they turned to God from idols, but lots of their family wouldn't have. And actually, do you know, often Jesus turns the thought from don't speculate about people who've gone, but focus on who's still here. So that's us and our other family members. And I guess we'll be re-energized to pray for and seek urgently their salvation. Yeah.
Thank you. There are quite a few questions there on the sort of how literal the text is and how exactly this is all going to happen. So let's look at this one. How literal is this? Are the dead rising first, literally before life Christians? Does this also mean dead Christians are not in the new creation yet? How are we to imagine all this?
So yes to literal. Yes, it does mean that they will rise before alive Christians. The worry seems to be that they're somehow disadvantaged, as if they're going to get to the buffet after all the good stuff's gone. You know, it's not that at all. They're actually going to be raised into their new bodies first, before us. And it does mean that they're not in the new creation yet. Yeah, that's correct. So that's what will be wrapped up and Jesus will bring in at this moment when all the dead Christians and alive Christians are gathered at his coming. So Paul talks, so where are they? Then the question, well, where are these dead Christians now? We don't know that much. Paul talks about being away from the body and with the Lord. He talks about that being better by far. So they're in Christ. That's the main thing about dead Christians. That's better, partly because they're not wrestling with the battle of all that we're battling with, trying to keep going in a broken, sinful world. And we can trust that they're safe in Christ and that on that day when he comes, they will be raised first into their new bodies.
That's encouraging, isn't it? You mentioned that this is a part of a sermon series. So we've been in 1 Thessalonians before. And there's a question here on how does this link with the rest of the letter? Why is Paul talking about the resurrection here?
Yeah, well, it's this thing about God's building a cathedral. So we're plugging away, trying to live the Christian life. We need the vision for where we're going. Where we're going is to a glorious day when we will be with Jesus and we will be like Jesus. That's what Paul's two prayers, the one in end of chapter 3 and end of chapter 5, focus on that great day when Jesus comes back, when we're with him, when we're like him. So if we're going to keep going and keep growing towards that day, we need a clear vision of it. And that's what he gives us in this week's passage and next one.
Great. We've probably got time for one more. I've just lost the one. Oh, here we go. Voted up. Thanks, Kev. Any practical suggestion on how we can be encouraging one another with today's truth? How do we do that?
I mean, don't you love it when, well, the preacher loves it when the application is, you know, spelled out. Verse 18, therefore encourage one another with these words. So let's make sure that we're talking about these things regularly, that that's not a weird thing for us to do. Because, you know, the moment of someone being in the throes of grief is usually not the best moment to start giving them a seminar on what happens to people when they die. There'll be too, people can't process things when they're in grief. So let's, given that most of the sadness, some of the sadness has already come for some of us, but a huge amount of the sadness is still to come in our lives. Let's equip each other, get each other ready for it by making sure that we talk about these things, that we ask these kind of great questions, you know, where are they now? And what will happen when they come back? Let's talk about it. Let's be as clear as we can based on what the Bible has said about all of those things. And let's encourage each other with these words. You know, sometimes Christians can say things about dead Christians or the future that are as vague as things that other people say. Let's be precise. Let's use the things that Jesus has given us deep assurance on to reassure one another with.